Good morning, planet Earth. Good morning to my friends out there, living in the various regions, scraping out a living, not afraid to give a little. Good morning to those flower collectors that walk down the street. They're really nice to meet. It is June the 5th, 2025, and it is right around 4:18 a.m. here on the Olympic Peninsula. That's a Thursday for you. Today is June the 5th, but tomorrow is June the 6th, right? 6-6? And on June the 6th, 1944, at the Allies, you know, they invaded France. An amphibious landing. Very, very dangerous. It was called Operation Overlord. We all know about that. Eisenhower, at the time, was so unsure of its success that he prepared for both possibilities. He didn't assume it would succeed. And, you know, he was the thinking general. And, you know, he probably understood the situation pretty well. I think he overestimated his enemy in some ways, but probably that was not a defect. But after June the 6th, 1944, what we also created was vacation land. You see, the war between the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany had already been going on for about 3 years, and it was terrible, and pretty much all of German resources after 1941 were directed at the war against the Soviets. So about 75% of all resources, people, technology, you name it, the German economy was directed at defeating the Soviet Union. By 1944, German troops are just burnt out, and they're basically performing the ancient art of retreat in order. Now, there's retreat in disorder. That's kind of terrible. But what the Germans did succeed to do in 44 and 45 was to at least retreat in such a way to buy, you know, Germany more time. Divisions on the Eastern Front that would get burnt out would be recycled in 44 or cycled through the Western Front in France. And the fact is, that Western Front became a kind of break for those troops. Yeah, it was still a war. But it was a different kind of war. And it was a war where being captured by an Allied, you know, trooper, an American or a Brit, would have a lower probability of execution and imprisonment. So yeah, German division would love to vacation. And then right about the time of something called Market Garden, that's September 1944, that bafflingly stupid airborne operation, there were several German divisions basically repairing, refitting. At least one or two of these were armored divisions in the vicinity of Market Garden and its objectives. So we look back upon D-Day and the Normandy landings, and of course, America won the war. That's what we tell ourselves. But the true story is not that simple. And it's one of the reasons why to this day there is animosity between the people of Russia and the United States, because we do not, and we have not, even remotely recognized the fact, and again, it's so absurd, but it's true, that the Soviet Union collapsed about 30 plus years ago. And knowing the simple fact means we can't really treat them the way we used to, but we still do. And that's a problem. So anyways, on this date, or rather tomorrow's date, 1944, think about the brave Americans who went into landing craft. If we had had to invade Japan, there's a very high likelihood that you would not be hearing from me today. Because my dad, you know, he was a mechanics mate or something in the Navy, but he was also a landing craft pilot. And so he would have driven the landing crafts back and forth, assuming you get more than one trip, if they had invaded the Japanese home islands. Good news, right? They dropped the bomb. So, next topic, right? Next topic, Dan. I did some analysis, looking at the basic data, and before I continue, philosophically, I don't think our government should exist. And this is just the simplest way I can put it. Any problems we need to solve, we could solve voluntarily. We could solve cooperatively. And this includes problems that don't fit neatly into the, you know, McDonald's, I want a cheeseburger model. And the solutions would be better. The outcomes would be better. This is what I believe. But I don't live in that world. You can call this the land of the free, the home of the brave. I call this the world of the coward, the land of the slave. I don't see that brave freedom. You know, it's kind of like after 9/11 when the Bush family said, hey, go out and shop. They define freedom in terms of spending, frankly, fiat currency that becomes more worthless as every day goes on. And if they hide the worthlessness, they hide it in the food, in the car, in everything you own, in all the decay, in the fact that quality control, you know, a revolution of Deming among many, which sort of peaked about 30, 40 years ago, has been in decline. And it's observable. It's something you can see. We're not talking about Six Sigma quality. We're talking about 1 in 10 something is crap. That's the truth. So before I start talking about this next topic, you need to understand, I don't believe in government solutions. I do believe taxation is theft. But currently I live on the Death Star. And I have a Death Star job. I've been working as an AmeriCorps volunteer the last couple of years until about a month ago when AmeriCorps got canceled. And I've been tutoring kids, algebra, geometry, English history, and I don't know. I think I helped. But if you're asking, did I make a ton of money doing it? Well, the simple answer is no. And what adds insult to injury is I spend about half of my income on rent, and keeping in mind I'm not making a ton of money, and the rest of it sort of gets me through the month, and I'm grateful for it, or at least I was until it got canceled. But you're okay with rejecting this. You can just say, well, Dan, you know, that's just stolen money. Fannie, Freddie, printed money that allows your house to be a giant gold pyramid, that's also stolen money, craphead. So if you're out there flipping houses or playing the pop of blumpity blump stock markets where you really don't have a right to go set up your own stock market, you really don't have a right to have an alternative to these things, and they'll tell you, well, there is no alternative, because that's what a neo-Stalinist hellhole tells you. So yeah, you can question my consistency, whatever. I chose to do this instead of becoming homeless, which is also related to today's topic. So if you think the world would have been better off with me popping pills and pooping on a sidewalk, okay. You know, and if you think the world would be better off if I were dead, I'm okay with that too. I got a lot of scammers sending me emails right now basically saying that, wishing me dead. You know, I'm okay with that. You know, don't threaten me with a good time, asshole. The AmeriCorps cuts were about $400 million. 32,000 jobs were cut as a result, but I don't think that is the whole picture. So the numbers we're going to work with are sort of a base case of 32,000, but I think the number impacted is bigger. On the whole, about 6.1% of the American population is a veteran. So I think it would be fair to say that of the 32,000 that just got canned, and maybe the number in reality is bigger, you could probably guess 6.1% are veterans. And in fact, the volunteer rate for veterans is higher, but I'm going to assume the most conservative case. That means 1,920 of the people that just got canceled were probably veterans. And frankly, to make this more straightforward, I'm going to say 2,000. Because I do think the rate is higher, and I think we capture a little bit of that error by just rounding up to 2,000 vets. The likelihood of becoming homeless at this point is about 50-50. That is a rough guess, but in reality, a lot of people are about a paycheck away. So you could very well end up homeless. I took this 59% of Americans being one paycheck from homelessness as a baseline estimate against the 2,000. If you use that as a multiplier, you end up with 1,180 brand new homeless veterans. But this does not deal with the fact, it doesn't even consider the fact, that these programs support veterans. And I'm not defending government. Everything AmeriCorps does could be done 100% in the private sector. But it's not. Because people assume, oh, somebody else is doing it. That's one of the reasons. And another reason is people don't have the money because the government takes all their money. And what they don't take, they debase through printing. So yeah, the number, roughly 1,000 new homeless veterans, may not seem like a big number to you. It may seem absurdly small. Dan, didn't they save 400 million? Let 1,000 new vets end up on the streets. Having worked with at-risk kids the last couple years and having seen the impact of homelessness upon their lives, I can tell you it's not that fucking simple. Of those roughly 1,000 new homeless veterans, there are families, there are kids, there are young kids, they're living out of cars, they're living in parks, they're at risk every single day. And yeah, they have McKinney Vento, and yeah, they're at least they're doing a better job counting the homeless. But if you're asking me, did McKinney Vento magically create resources for all these kids? No, it didn't. It simply demanded that you find the resources, more or less. Oh, but there are grants. Sure, there are grants. I don't know. I mean, at this point in time, you have to ask yourself, are there? We thought there was a grant through the end of the year. Let's assume you think AmeriCorps is crap. I was working a tutoring center up until the end of April. I was tutoring algebra, geometry, and other topics, like I said. I was acting as an overflow room for teachers that needed to take problematic students and put them someplace where they could study, where they could avoid conflict. The teacher's situation improved. And guess what? The student in the AmeriCorps room got a chance to have space and to work on homework. If you ask me, I think our outcomes were pretty good. Could we have done better? Sure. But again, I need to underline, this was not something I got rich doing, okay? This is something where I avoided being homeless by taking a job that I would not have taken under any other circumstance. So when you think about, and I got to get back to this, that those 1,000 new homeless veterans that Mega Man just created, it really isn't just about that. It's worse. And I think the number is worse. I think the real impact of what they did to AmeriCorps, to veterans, is way worse than just 1,000 new homeless vets. I can't prove it. I don't have access to the data. And I simply don't want to go down that road because at this point, I'm not sure it matters. The reason why I'm even talking about this, and I need to emphasize this point, is because there's all these headlines about how Trump is helping veterans. And I got to tell you something, brothers and sisters, that's a load of shit. That's a load of shit. I'm certain he's doing things, high-profile Vegas types of things, to make it look like he's helping homeless veterans. But do not be fooled. The reality is the inflation that he is asking for. He is asking for inflation. He wants a big, gigantic debt, and he wants Powell to reduce rates. He wants printed money. Because even if he knows nothing, at least he knows this as a real estate guy, that the only thing propping up the pensions, the IRAs, all that garbage money at this point in America, to include the self-deception, is the belief that your home is worth $1 million when probably it's worth 50 grand or less. He knows this, or I'm not sure he does. He's a column of smoke. But the people that run things know this, so they got to keep it going. But that process of pumping up the housing market, well, guess what? That makes a lot of homeless people, and a percentage of those are veterans. And this is not even getting into the issue of being able to afford to eat. There's been a lot of hullabaloo about how we have deflation now. That's a load of shit. Okay, I paid about $11 for some ground beef last week. Again, probably more pink slime than beef at this point. I would have paid maybe $2 a few years ago. So how do we have this miracle when in reality people are still being squeezed? Now, you can come back and say, well, it was Biden, and that's fine. If you like playing the game of on what day of the week Trump owns the economy and on what day of the week he doesn't, that's your business. You can play that game, buddy. but it's a dumb game. I have links to some articles. I have links to the policy statement from Trump, how he's going to create a facility to house 6,000 veterans. I don't think any of that's ever going to happen. He is a liar. He's a cheat. But guess what? They all are. And probably mostly, like I said, he's a calm smoke. He's a noisemaker. Next topic. Dan, you're so mean to Mega Man. You know, I've got some good news. I may end up working a contract for the school district next year. This is not AmeriCorps related. It's related to special education, and I could end up working as an assistant in the district. I won't make super great money, but in reality, when I think about my last contract at Microsoft and how I would work 20 to 30 hours every week that I wouldn't get paid for, the money actually isn't that far off. And I don't have to, like, work for gigantic shitheads and take an hours-long, multi-hour-long bus ride out to Redmond to be around those shitheads. So, no, the money is not the issue. If I get the contract, my personal financial situation improves a little. And, frankly, psychologically, it probably improves a lot. I have been working this job for, well, only a day so far. And really, I don't have the job yet. I just interviewed for it, but I took a sub role in the same basic school. And yeah, so I had one day's experience, but it was a really good experience. So who knows? I think that's some good news, and I think I can do some good. Does this mean I believe in public schools and taking your money and property taxes and all the other garbage in this neo-Stalinist crap head hole? No, I don't. I just need to do something, like you do, to survive, to provide food, water, shelter, and maybe a few other things. But I have no illusion that any of this has much of a shelf life. There you go. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. You're worried about Dunning-Kruger. I'm worried about the plastic spoons worth of microplastics in everybody's brain. We're not the same. You're worried about Dunning-Kruger. I'm worried about brain rot. You're worried about Dunning-Kruger. Yeah, I'll leave that. I'm going to go to the next topic. It's a silly, silly Dr. Freckles quote. Go F yourself, Dr. Freckles. Here's another Dr. Freckles quote. Using fiat currency is like being covered in leeches. I'm going to let that stand. You can figure it out. You don't need any explanation. I love you guys. Good morning. Fuck you. I love you. Here's a topic we're going to probably stick on because it's related to all the themes. And it's why if I find myself slipping into Trump is this and Trump is that, I know I have TDS. If I started saying Trump is saving us and he's a hero, I would also have TDS. TDS is a two-sided coin. If you think Trump is Hitler, you got TDS. If you think Trump is your savior, your friend, or is even a decent person, you have TDS. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. If you understand Trump's purpose, then he is a success. If you understand Trump's purpose, he is a success. He really is. When I was a kid, and I don't know what it's called. It could be called a whirligig, I forget. But when I was a kid, let's just call it a noisemaker. There were these little noisemakers you could spin around your hand, and they would make a nasty, nasty, clicky, metallic noise. And again, when you're a kid, you love that. You love running around, annoying your friends, and probably annoying a lot of adults. You know, honey, can you refresh my martini? You know what I'm saying. Trump's purpose is not to help you. Trump's purpose is not to be literally Hitler. Trump's purpose is really not to funnel illegals to the death camp in El Salvador. And probably Trump is never going to take Greenland, Panama Canal, or Canada, or a lot of other places. That's not his purpose. His purpose is to be a giant noisemaker. His purpose is to confuse, enrage, to act like an arsonist, to be a divider, in exactly the same way Obama was, but in the most childish way possible. His purpose is to be rudderless, and he is rudderless. He is constantly changing his four-dimensional chess head every single fucking day. His purpose is to instill fear, just like the COVID. In fact, I call him a bookend for a reason, because I think we are in the popping smoke phase, which means, if I'm right, any day now, and you can figure out what I mean by that. But like the COVID, he looms over the world right now, and it is ridiculous. It's not just in the United States, it's everywhere. And people are either loving the guy or hating the guy. But what they're not doing is trying to figure out what the fuck is really going on. You know, no one is disturbed that there's a definition of permafrost that now classifies some of the shit you're keeping in your college dorm freezer as permafrost because it's been frozen for at least 2 years. Yeah, nobody cares about that. Oh, I don't know, Dan. What does permafrost mean? You can find three definitions. It used to be, I thought, only two. There are now three different definitions for permafrost. No, nobody gives a fuck about that. But we sure as shit give a fuck about Donald Trump, Papa Blumpity Blump. But Papa Dumpity Dump, Blumpity Blump, is just a giant fucking column of smoke. And if you understand that is what he is supposed to be doing, being a giant column of smoke, then yeah, he is winning. He's doing his job. He is a success. He gets an A+. He is performing the same duty as the COVID, but in a magical way that astounds and suspends belief. And some people don't want to hear that. It's like the AmeriCorps cuts. They don't really make sense. It's like this absurd bill that's going to add debt. Everybody knows the debt's going to go up. We're all playing pretend that we don't know this. All of this deception, self-deception, layers of lying, building upon each other. That's smoke. That's obscuration. What we need to be doing is trying to figure out what the fuck's going on. But there are no adults in the room. And that's where we're at. So if you want to invest time in him any more than I do, which means I'll take a look at this nonsense, but I've got other more serious problems like survival. If you want to take some of your survival resources and focus on this calm of smoke, that's your business. I don't recommend wasting time on it, though. Next topic. But Dan, you're being unfair, am I? So you remember when Trump said he would end the Ukraine war day one? That was like, what, January 21st, 2025? He ended the Ukraine war. But it seems to be escalating. It seems to be aggravating. And it seems we got a lot of rhetoric. I talked about this the other day around World War III all the time. And it could very well be just a fear monkey, which means your best advice is to ignore it, but you need to know something. And these are the intuitions and the vibrations that come from dimension 13. It's a dimension right next to Alpha Quadrant, not far from G6 Grid, in Sector 45, by the 12th year of the Ukraine war, women will wear only camouflage bikinis, and they'll fight while they're pregnant. Babies will jump out of the womb when they're born. They'll do a combat roll, do a PLF. They'll cut their own cords and grab a rifle. And this is just a Saturday morning at Walmart. By the 45th year of the Ukraine war, robot Zelensky and cyborg Putin will have all their remaining wet parts replaced with steel and metal shavings and diesel fuel and sawdust and broken glass. They will take on hoobly wives and spread their Jergen sauce. Cave bear corpsmen will invade Kiev 3, that's Kiev Part 3, the first couple being nuked. Belarus will still be known for swamp hooker Florida style lovin'. By the 99th year of the Ukraine war, all will become intelligent paste. Everything will be smart paste. You'll eat the smart paste. You'll be smart paste. Mace Gergs, carrying Nancy Mace butt cake pics, will share white bean chili with Deanna types at Coug's Hot Chick Parade. 4 million tanks will do battle in deserted Sector 88, also known as France. And only rat pirates will see themselves as lucky. By the 120th year of the Ukraine War, crystal ball maniacs will storm the barricades of West Gatom, London, and the Russian super robots will pummel the Japanese Space Navy. Humans will eat skunk grease and live on coyote urine. That's by the 120th year of the Ukraine War. In the 200th year of the Ukraine War, lesbian skyships powered by vacuum technology will drop zinc rods from 30 miles up on the cities of Rome and Buenos Aires. Egyptian ape forces take Baghdad as the Russians wheel on the Kasbah. Monkey stew pasta is the new kale. That's in the 200th year. Zorgonian frood wenches will serve cub soup in year 255 of the Ukraine War. The gumptus mess left over from what was once Putin is kept in a jar next to the jar that contains Zelensky and 6 million juicy Jews killed when the thing that never happened in the first place, oh my God, it happens again. And we said we would never, never let the thing that ever, never happened ever, ever happen again. That's fucking terrible. In the year 300 of the Ukraine War, humans will be amalgams of tumors that replace all their key systems and organs. They'll poop out tumors and scrape tumors from their bodies to consume as protein food. Angle-eyed bride cages will be the rage when springtime rolls around and the sound of the great horn is heard. Birthing centers are set up next to Taco Bell as a modest proposal becomes public policy and the rabbis hold their eldritch rituals deep in the tunnels of Denver Airport. In the year 500 of the Ukraine War, the Moon Kings break off and form a double secret alliance with Mars and Cyber Israel 9000. Many millions, perhaps exactly 6 million, are killed that year. And so many films are made about this that it now has better brand recognition in the year 500 than McDonald's or, you know, or anybody else, really, you know. Ron Popeil. After 600 years of totalistic, autistic war in the Ukraine, the Emperor Nosto sends emissaries from Australia and Pluto. Cryptic rabbi tunnel creeps gather up the innocent oils and sell them to Ching Chong A&W-style Chinese food places for pennies. And the hipsters, they drink it up. Various whore, I need to drink some coffee if you can thank me very much. Various whore brigades under the leadership of Robo Taylor Swift move quickly across the Great Plains. They seize Kansas City and Fargo. And this is all while the monkey chiefdoms, chieftains eat dugout curry, a nice slurry of rice and blood. By the millennial celebration of the Ukraine War, 1,000 years of the Ukraine War, all the lands are salted and dead. The sky is a deep purple, and the lands grow no food. Birds do not sing. There is no bling. cottage folk eating cheese curds gird themselves for the final onslaught of Grumptian robots, and what's left of humanity is watching the booty. Terrified space troopers are digging trenches on planet Jube, where lubed-up Yorg versions generate protein mix for the fixer friends and the mutant anime birds. Lord Tunstall of the Galactic Alliance sends one last assault on the Yukis, who are holding up in caves with, you know, tunnel rabbis. They have only 6 million seconds of food left. It's a Showa. It's a Holocaust. I'm going to read something that I wrote about 10 years ago. It's based upon a conversation from 2015. The first version is on a blog that exists in PDF form only because it's another thing that GoDaddy canceled. But again, I published it the second time in 2016, July the 29th, and I'm going to read it. And it's based upon a conversation I had with some software engineering pals at a kind of Mediterranean Greek restaurant in Indianapolis in 2015. The title of the essay is Odds of Survival, The Napkin Estimates. At some point in the not-too-distant future, the structures and systems that comprise our normal world will begin failing, falling apart. Maybe it won't be apparent or obvious at first, and perhaps someone will trigger a world war when it does start, as cover, as a smokescreen. But it will begin soon enough, and these systems, these safeguards against the wolves in the distance, will simply cease to function. So I thought it would be a nice thought experiment to do the math, so to speak, on the back of a napkin, making a gross estimate, a gross or not quite precise estimate, of the population of the U.S. 5 and 50 years after the most likely best-case scenario occurs. But first we need to cover the most likely scenario, and as it so happens, the worst case. Here's the worst case and most likely scenario. Our government and other governments get pulled into a world war, which inevitably becomes a nuclear war. You might as well write off most of the world, including America. I would be surprised if there were 20 million healthy Americans left in the U.S. after 5 years. Might be closer to 2 million. The world population would go from around 7 billion to about 500 million in 5 years following a nuclear war. And this might be optimistic. A nuclear war would suck, and I hate to break it to you, it is probably the most likely possible future at this point. But what about the best case scenario? That is also the most likely. And I know that's a weird way of thinking about it, but let's focus on that. And that is what I mean. The most likely best case, not most likely, but the most likely best case scenario, the best chance we have is the following. Number one, financial crisis leads to the disruption of major logistical systems, communication networks, and any other part of modernity that is both demanding of technical know-how and skilled labor. And no, sorry, your iPhone and your Bitcoin won't help you here. Number two, since food is not currently local in any real sense, populations will scramble for the resources to find food immediately and to relocalize food production. This will be pretty hard, since most modern cities have about 7 to 10 days of food on hand. I would expect things to get really bad by week three, and also note, a lot of property, a lot of soil, quote-unquote, in cities is toxic. Number three, water sources at this point are heavily dependent upon industrial methods of treatment and purification. Most of America's population lives in urban or suburban environments. These environments do not have well systems. They need water treatment plants. Disease will spread, thirst, dehydration, and death. Number four, our medical systems are highly dependent upon industrial-scale medicine, hospital systems, modern pharmaceuticals. Those systems' businesses will cease to function very well, if at all. There will be no primary medical care for most, and what they do receive will be very limited. And childbirth? Expect both infant mortality and deaths due to childbirth to skyrocket. Inadvertently, the last century of improved care for birthing has reduced natural population strength, with respect to childbirth. This implies that death from childbirth will be worse during this time than at any previous recorded time in human history. And disease, funny. You're so funny that you don't realize what's coming on the disease infection front. All those superbugs we've created, mostly in hospitals, with the abuse of antibiotics and vaccines, yeah, they'll hunt us with a vengeance. Though they have no sense of vengeance. They're just tiny organisms, after all. Number 5, nuclear power. I hope you don't live near one of the nuclear power plants. I hope you don't live near one of the boiling water reactor plants. Because there's lots of things that you can do with nuclear reactors, or specifically boiling water breeder reactors, but you can't ignore them. And even if you scram them, you still have to cycle cold water through the core. Because if you don't, the control rods will deteriorate. This is what happened at Fukushima. And then you no longer have a means to control that reactor at all. Number 6. And I'm summarizing a little here, listeners, so... Number 6, psychologically. Most of your neighbors are not remotely prepared for what's coming at all. They don't really understand what they need versus what they want. They are going to cling on to things that they need to leave behind. And in the process, they're going to let go of things that could keep them alive and their family alive. Psychologically, which is number 6, will be one of the biggest factors that will make this crack up into one terribly insane period of time. Number 7, EBT, welfare, food stamps, Social Security, etc. These things are going to stop working. They're either going to cut these benefits, or they're going to inflate them to the point that they're meaningless, that your Social Security buys you a cup of coffee. And number 8, the failures of all the above are synergistic and cascading. They impact and amplify the negative effects of each other. Simply put, stuff breaking down will make more stuff breaking down more likely and far more severe, each disaster compounding the weight of the next. And so when I do the math on this, and again, I'm going to let you read the details if you want to, I more or less expect about 96 million people to be left alive here in a couple years. And probably in about 20 years from now or whatever, I think there's going to be about 50 million Americans left. And this was a prediction. Again, I summarized a little towards the end here. This was a prediction I made in 2015, and I said it was about 7 years away. I don't think I nailed it, but I think I was like a lot of people who understood what was coming. Now, do I see the nuclear scenario the same today that I did back then? Not exactly. I think it could be a fear monkey. But this most likely best case scenario, I have been consistent on this for 10 years, and consistency proves nothing. I could be consistently wrong. But since I do think this 7-year window is probably like a 10-year window, and in that sense, the original prediction is wrong, I think I could still end up being right. And again, like so many other things we can talk about, it doesn't fucking matter. Now, why did I talk about the 12th year, the Ukraine war, and this garbage? Because a lot of this is starting to rhyme. A lot of this is starting to make sense in the way that things that don't make sense do. And I know that sounds like sideways thinking. It is. We live in a kind of sideways timeline right now. You know, you can't even keep up with it. You'd say, well, I read The Onion, or I read Babylon Bee. I watch Saturday Night Live, and everybody is 10 years behind. Things are so crazy right now, it's impossible, really, to spoof them. Unless you go to a place of insanity, which maybe sometimes I get to, where you can stay a little bit ahead, anyways. I don't think it's the end of the world. I do think about a decade ago, a lot of us started sensing that things would fall apart. And frankly, in 2019, which was well within the window, I felt that we would start tipping over. And in my opinion, it did kind of start in 2019. So in fairness to my prediction, I think it more or less stands. Remember, point 1 has to do with financial and economic failure. I think that started in 2019, and they covered up that part of it with the monkey herpes. And this other part, you know, the other side of the rainbow, they're covering it up with Papa Blump. It's Thursday. It's Thursday, June the 5th, 2025. Tomorrow is June the 6th, you know, D-Day, Normandy Day, whatever. I hope that you're doing okay. I'm not sure that any of us really are. I think that I have had some good luck in recent weeks, and I have a few really good friends, people who care. But beyond that, I don't have to tell you. Have a great rest of your day.